Let's get started. I give this class, I think, every year. I think maybe we missed last year, but we definitely gave this class 2 years ago. So I apologize if this is just repetition for some of you. But nevertheless, it's a good topic to review. It's timely, and that's the topic of what is Torah's perspective on Thanksgiving. Tonight's question of life's biggest question is what is the Torah's perspective on Thanksgiving? And it's a funny question for me personally to ask because growing up, Thanksgiving was my favorite day. It was a big deal in the Reich household, a big deal. In our house, the three most important days of the year were Yom Kippur, the Super Bowl, and Thanksgiving. I'm assuming it was in that order. It could be that depending on who you ask from the family, the order would be a little different. Those are definitely the three most important days in the Reich household growing up. Thanksgiving was a big deal. My wife likes to make fun of me that when I was in yeshiva, I would go home for Thanksgiving. Even when I was in yeshiva for Israel, I went home for Thanksgiving. But Thanksgiving was a big deal in the Reich household. It's interesting that I think particularly in our house, it was important for two reasons. Because my family, speaking on a very personal note, my family is a representation of the American dream. On my father's side, it's a family of immigrants that came here with absolutely nothing. My father worked very, very hard and to make ends meet. And his parents worked very, very hard just to make ends meet. My grandfather was from Slovakia, my grandmother from Libya. The two of them, two immigrants, not knowing the language, did just menial jobs just to make some parnassa. They lived in a one bedroom apartment. They really, really worked very, very hard, and they have a lot of hakaras hatov, a lot of gratitude to the United States for giving them their opportunities in order to build a family that they built. And then on my mother's side, on my maternal side, we have American roots in the same town in New Jersey that go back to the Civil War period. I was born in the same hospital as my great great grandfather. In Somerville, New Jersey, going back to the 1860s, 1870s, Mamish Civil War period. So we, of course, on that side of the family, have this real, American identity to ourselves. And so, from both perspectives, we have, when it comes to Thanksgiving, it's an opportunity of having Hakaras Hatov for everything that we've been able to experience, all the good that we've had from living in this country. Not to say that we don't have a Hakaras Hatov for Eretz Yisrael, of course, that goes without saying. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't have a Hakaras Hatov for America as well. In fact, if you take a look on the first page, there's a excuse me. There's a letter that was written by Rav Moshe Feinstein that was signed October 3rd, 1984. Rav Moshe Feinstein is undisputed the greatest Torah scholar, arguably the greatest Torah scholar to ever walk on the walk in our country. I mean, to live in our country, to have a yeshiva in our country. It was the greatest posig probably. That was ever bred on American soil. He was, I think he was born in Uzda, in Russia in 1895. His father was the rabbi in Luban. He, I think, became the rabbi in Luban as well. And then he immigrated to the United States, I think in the 1930s, established his yeshiva on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, Masifta Tiferes Yerushalayim, that was later taken over by his son, posthumously taken over by his son, Reb David Feinstein, who had just passed away 2 years ago. And now the Rosh Yeshiva is his grandson. Rav Moshe was an incredible, incredible Talmud Chacham. He writes over here in this letter that is being sent. He sent this letter to the Agudas Harabbanim in just before the 1984 election. So just you see about a month before the 1984 election. The 84 election was Reagan's second term, right? It was before Reagan's second term, right? Yeah, yeah, because Bush was 88, and then Clinton was 92. So, yeah, so Ray, this is Reagan's second term, right? So, so this is what he writes for Moshe Feinstein, encouraging everybody to vote. He says, on reaching the shores of the United States, Jews found a safe haven. He experienced this firsthand. The rights guaranteed by the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights have allowed us the freedom to practice our religion without interference and to live in this republic in safety. A fundamental principle of Judaism is Hakaras HaTov, to have gratitude, recognizing benefits afforded us and giving expression of our appreciation. Therefore, he writes, it's incumbent upon each Jewish citizen to participate in the democratic system, which guards the freedom we enjoy. The most fundamental responsibility incumbent on each individual is to register and to vote. Therefore, I urge all members of the Jewish community to fulfill their obligations by registering as soon as possible and by voting. By this, we can express our appreciation and contribute to the continued security of our community. Signed, M. Feinstein, by Rav Moshe Feinstein Zatzal. So, I mean, it's blatantly obvious from the letter that Rav Moshe, of course, he's talking about voting as that particular expression of Hakaras HaTov, but it's obvious that it's important for us to have proper Hakaras HaTov, to be thankful to the United States. That was why Thanksgiving was established as a national holiday. It was established by President Lincoln in towards the end of 1863. It was after the Battle of Gettysburg that Lincoln established this holiday of Thanksgiving as a national holiday to have appreciation for the freedom that this country affords us. He established on the fourth Thursday of every November. It's interesting, just also from a historical note, it's interesting to point out that was the way that Thanksgiving has been. It is practiced in the United States. It's interesting, though, to note that there were a couple of years, I think about 3 or 4 years, that it was practiced, observed on the third Thursday of November, not the fourth. And that was changed by, by Roosevelt, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, after the Depression, or towards the end of the Depression, in 39, changed it to the third Thursday of November to help increase the holiday shopping period to help ease things after the towards the end of the Depression. That's also an interesting note. But anyway, regardless of what it is, Thanksgiving is was established as a day of giving Hakaras HaTov and to the United States. And as we mentioned, that we, as Rav Moshe told us, we have an obligation to have proper Hakaras HaTov, to have proper gratitude to the United States. While this is all well and good, and it's all true, everything we've said till now, that does not answer our question as to what the Torah's view on Thanksgiving is. What this has just told us is the Torah and our rabbis understand that it is of importance for us to have proper Hakaras HaTov, have proper gratitude to the United States. That doesn't necessarily mean that we are supposed to be observing Thanksgiving as a holiday in and of itself. It's important, like we always do on these Wednesday nights, is that when we look at a topic and ask the question of what is the Torah's view on this topic, we're not here to philosophize. We're here to look from a theological perspective, to look at what the Torah has to say from a technical standpoint, because we're not like Korach. Korach's fatal flaw was that he was looking at the way we're supposed to observe our religious lives from a completely logical standpoint, or from a standpoint of common sense. If it made sense, then it means we should do it. If it doesn't make sense, I mean, we shouldn't do it. But the Torah has its own set of rules and regulation, its own doctrine of logic that we need to adhere to and we need to follow. So therefore, we need to ask the question from the standpoint of, it is clearly obvious that Thanksgiving is an important day and having Hakaras HaTov to the United States is important. What is the Torah's perspective, though, on observing the day as a holiday? That's the question we need to ask ourselves. So this really starts with the way that we view secular behavior in general. What's the Torah's view on secular behavior? Baruch atah Adonai Melchom Shekol Nehi Mevarecho. What's the Torah's view on secular behavior? So if you take a look on page number 2, we have the psukim here from Parshas Achrimos in Sefer Vayikra, where the Torah is going through a number of different laws. Here in particular, God is instructing Moshe Rabbeinu on some of the laws that we need to be cognizant of when we enter into the land of Israel, where Hashem is letting Moshe Rabbeinu know some things we need to be conscious of when we enter into the land. So if you take a look on page 2, line number 6, across from the arrow by the bracket, the Torah tells us, it's double-sided, so it's on the back page. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, God said to Moshe to say the following, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, tell the Jewish people, v'amar to them and say to them the following, number 1, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, meaning to say that this, the Torah, is your way of connecting back to me, meaning everything you're going to be learning is going to be a way of you learning how to manifest God's morality and proper ethics into the world. Continues the Torah and says, what is an example of that? Kema'asei Eretz Mitzrayim. That now that you are leaving, you just left Mitzrayim, and you picked up over the 210 years that you were living in Egypt, you picked up a number of different things, probably from the Egyptians, Egyptian culture, Egyptian activities, practices, etc. Kemase Eretz Mitzrayim, the way that the Egyptians practice, Asher Yeshavtem Ba, that you were just living there, so you know, you're very aware of what they do. Lo Tasu, don't do those things. Don't act like an Egyptian. Uchimase Eretz Kenan, and now you're going to learn some activities from the Canaanites that you're going to be encountering. Don't do like them either. Asher ani mavi etchem shama, I'm about to bring you there. Lo ta'asu. Don't act like them. Don't act like a Canaanite. Don't act like an Egyptian. Ubechukoseim lo telechu. Do not go according to their customs, according to their laws, according to the way that they do things. That's not the way that you're supposed to do things. Rather, what should you do? Continues the Torah in verse number 4, Pasuk Dalid, line number 10 in the middle. Et mishpatai ta'asu, follow my laws, ve'et chukotai tishmeru, you follow my decrees, my Torah, lalechet behem, follow them. And now the bracket, Ani Hashem Elokechem, remind you, I am Hashem your God. You follow in my ways. Follow in the ways of Hashem. Don't pick up practices from the other nations. So this halacha, b'chukoseim lo seilechu, not to walk in the ways of secular society, is a halachic, it's a Torah commandment. It's a negative command from the Torah that one is not allowed to walk in the ways of secular society, but that begs a question, like every other mitzvah, well, what are the parameters of that? For example, let's say one of my favorite foods is Cap'n Crunch cereal. Cap'n Crunch cereal, it's delicious. I love Cap'n Crunch. Yeah, I have Cap'n Crunch cereal. Cap'n Crunch cereal is fantastic. Okay, it's one of my favorite cereals. So Cap'n Crunch cereal is not a Jewish food per se, right? It's not a Jewish breakfast food. It's a secular breakfast food, right? I can't imagine Rav Eliashiv ever ate a bowl of Cap'n Crunch cereal before. He had never encountered Cap'n Crunch in his life. He wouldn't know who Cap'n Crunch is. Who's Cap'n Crunch, right? So does that mean that there's a halachic issue of me eating Cap'n Crunch because it's a practice I've picked up from the Gentiles? Right. So on the one hand, that sounds ridiculous. Right. And then On the flip side, well, hold on one second. Does that mean that if I want to eat a cookie, I'm only allowed to eat Leader's cookies or Reisman cookies or only Jewish brands of cookies? Or better yet, am I only allowed to eat Jewish types food? I'm only allowed to eat kugel and matzo balls. I'm not allowed to have any other type. Not allowed to have a hamburger. A hamburger is something we picked up from the non-Jews. Pizza, something we picked up from the non-Jews. Not allowed to eat pizza, right? We have to understand the parameters of this halacha. Now, on the other side, right, things that are definitely non-Jewish behaviors, idolatry. Can't do idolatry, right? That's pretty obvious, right? That's its own prohibition in the Torah. So that must not be what we're talking about then. So what is it that we're talking about? It must be something that is in the middle. So what are the defining parameters of this prohibition of B'chuk Oseim Lo Seh Lechu? So this is why we have our Shulchan Aruch, we have our holy Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, excuse me, Rabbi Yosef Karo, 1488 to 1575. You have over there in front of you is the one of the cover pages. There's been many editions of different cover pages of the Shulchan Aruch, but I want to just show what we're talking about over here. In the center is the Shulchan Aruch, because all the other works are building off of the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Karo, we've spoken about many, many times, created a halachic revolution where he said it's enough of them there being all of these separate works of halacha. We're going to try and codify it into one general section. One general place, rather, where everything is going to be in front of you, like a set table. That's the name Shulchan Aruch comes from. I'm going to write an encyclopedia that backs up everything I'm saying with all of its sources. That's the Beis Yosef. And then everything's going to be set out for you as an index in this Code of Jewish Law, the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Moshe Isserlish, which is also circled over there on the page. Rav Moshe Isserlish was a contemporary of the Shulchan Aruch, half the age of the Shulchan Aruch, lived from 1530 to 1572, lived a very, very short life, unfortunately. He said, I'm gonna follow Rabbi Yosef Karo's lead, and I'm just going to build off of here. I'm just going to add in some annotations along the way where Ashkenaz custom may differ a little bit. And then you have all those other commentaries, like that of the Shach, and the Magen Avram, and the Taz, and the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, who we'll mention tonight, the Vilna Gaon, 1720 to 1790 something, 97, I think, was an amazing genius, probably the greatest halachic mind to live from Rav Yosef Karo till today. Even the Vilna Gaon was an incredible genius. He has a running commentary on the Shulchan Aruch as well, but everything is being built off of the Shulchan Aruch. So to answer this question of how to look at the parameters of B'chuk Oseim Lo Seh Lechu, what better place to look than this? So let's take a look on page number 4. The Shulchan Aruch Rabbi Yosef Karo writes the following. He says in line number 1, Ein holchin b'chukos ha'ovdei kochavim. We're not supposed to follow the practices of the non-Jews. Not supposed to follow the practices of the non-Jews. V'lo yilbash. V'lo yilbash. Malbush hamiyuchah b'hem. We're not supposed to wear a dress that is specific to them. An example of this, what does that mean? A dress that is specific to them. So if you take a look at the Ramah, the Ramah says, well, I'll tell you what this means over here. What this means is, take a look on line number 8 by the underline. The Vilna Gaon says, Ela you moved al mehem, we're supposed to be different from them, bim al bushav, in the way we dress, ubishar masav, and the things that we do. V'cholze eino aser, and this is prohibited, Ela bedavar shenagu bo ha'ovdei kochavim l'shem pritzos. It's only something that is a specific non-Jewish activity that is not a good one. Kigon, for example, shenagu lilvosh malbushim adumim, like cardinals have a practice of wearing red garb. Vuhu malbush sarim ukedome lezeh, leaders have a specific garb that they wear. That type of clothing we should not wear those things. So this is the Rama is giving us a very good parameter here. This is, by the way, this comes from the Maharik. The Rama is quoting from the Ran and the Maharik. And it's basically they're dealing with analyzing two different passages in the Gemara. One is Masechta Sanhedrin on Daf Nun Beis. The other is Masechta Avodah Zarah and Daf Yud Aleph. But without getting into all the analytics of it, the Rama quoting from other Rishonim is coming out with the halacha saying that when is it an issue of Bechuk Oseim Lo Seilechu, of following the ways of the non-Jews, is if you're taking a specific non-Jewish activity that they do that is not a good practice, meaning it is not something that makes sense. Let me say, so something that's obviously related to Avodah Zarah is obviously something, right? Like the clothing that the cardinals wear. But not only that, even let's say, like, for example, an example that my Rebbe, Rav David Hirsch, likes to give or gave a number of times, and I heard him talk about the subject, is a sneaker that was very popular when I was growing up was the Air Jordan sneakers, the Michael Jordan basketball sneakers, his brand Air Jordan, right? You buy them, it's supposed to make you jump higher, right? Be like Mike, right? And it never worked for me. I don't know why it didn't work for me. I have to get my money back. A special sneaker, right? Getting the Air Jordans. Now, were they the best sneaker on the market? We're just from a technical standpoint, from a if you were to ask a professional basketball player, is this really the best available basketball shoe, right? So I'm sure some would say it's very, very good. Others would say I like Reebok or Skechers better, right? They wouldn't necessarily say that Air Jordans are the best, or I like Nike, whatever it might be. You ask others, though, they'd say, no, Air Jordan is great. So when I'm going to buy Air Jordans, I need to honestly ask myself, why am I buying the Air Jordans? Am I buying the Air Jordans because I want to be like Mike? Because I want to follow the practice of having Air Jordans because it's something that is cool? Or am I getting Air Jordans because it's something that, I really think it's going to help improve my basketball game? Or my podiatrist told me that Air Jordans are a good shoe for me to wear for my ankles or whatever it might be when I'm playing basketball. So if it's I want to be like Mike, that could really be a problem of B'chuk Oseim Lo Seilechu, according to the Rama. But if it's because I it's a good sneaker and so it's going to help my ankles while I'm playing basketball, whatever it might be, so okay, then getting Air Jordans, nothing wrong with getting Air Jordans because it makes sense. Now, who argues with this? Who argues is this is the Vilna Gaon. The Gra, the Vilna Gaon says that I'm going to take a much more extreme approach with B'chuk Oseim Lo Seilechu. Who says that even if it's something that makes sense, if there's an alternative, then why would we do this practice, right? You don't have to have Air Jordans. It's not the only shoe on the market. It's not the only basketball shoe. You don't have to have Air Jordans, right? There's other perfectly good basketball shoes. So if that's the case, so then that's just doing a practice of the non-Jews. It's something that we picked up and learned from the non-Jews that's not necessary to be done. Says the Vilna Gaon the following. Take a look at the bottom of page 4, line number 1. Sorry, it's a little bit tough to see, but I'll read it regardless. It says the Vilna Gaon, Kfar Kasafti, I already wrote, Shedivre Haran Temuin, that the words of the Ran are very difficult to understand. The Gam Devre Maharik Ein Nirin. I also don't understand the Maharik. He says, line number 3, towards the end of line number 3, Ella Devadai Hakol Aser. All of this would be prohibited. Absolutely prohibited. Rak Davka Lilmon Mehem Aser. Anything that's a practice that we picked up directly from the non-Jews is a problematic practice. And we're not allowed to do that practice. So what would be a good case study to show the difference between the Rama and the Vilna Gaon? So take a look back in the Rama, and the Rama gives us a good example of what's the practical difference between the two of them. Take a look back towards the top half of the page, line number 11 by the underline. Says the Rama about Davar Shinagu Lito Elas. Something that is a practice of the non-Jews that makes sense to do, that the Rama would say you're allowed to do, and the Gra would say you're not allowed to do. What's an example of that? Kigon, last line in the Rama, top half of the page, Kagon Shedarkan Shekol Mishu Rofa, the practice of anyone who's a doctor, Mumcha, that someone's a professional doctor, Yesh Lo Malbush Miyuchad, they have a specific garb that they wear. They wear their white coat. Wear their white coat. Shinikarbo, what's the purpose of that? What's the purpose of wearing the white coat? Now, I'm sure that there's a functional purpose of wearing the white coat. They have the big pockets, right? So it's easy to put your stethoscope in or whatever. Okay. But there's also plenty of doctors that don't wear the white coats, right? So you don't really need to wear the white coat. So then why, though, is it still important to wear the white coat? So I bet if you ask a lot of doctors, the reason why it's important still to wear the white coat is because when you're wearing the white coat, everyone knows that you're the doctor in the room. And therefore, it's important to wear the white coat. That's what the Rama says. Shenikarbo, it's clear to everyone else. Shehu rofe uman mutalul vosho. If that's the reason why you're wearing the white coat, then it's perfectly permissible to wear the white coat. Now, where did we pick up the practice of wearing white coats from? It's a secular innovation, right? Something that some Goyish doctor came up with one time. And it, I don't know the history behind it. I'm sure maybe some of the doctors here know the history behind it. But some Goyish doctor came up with the practice and started wearing the white coats or started wearing the scrubs or whatever it might be. And then everyone started doing it. It was not, we have no minhagim in Chazal about wearing white coats. So it's definitely not a Jewish practice. Nevertheless, the Rama is saying, perfectly permissible. Now, if you were to ask the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, you'd probably say it's prohibited. Probably say it's prohibited to wear the white coats. So the question becomes then, well, how do we practice? Because another great case study of this is Thanksgiving. As we mentioned before, does Thanksgiving make a lot of sense? It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense of having Hakar Zatov, of taking time to have specific Hakar Zatov for the United States and everything it's done for the Jewish people, for us personally. It makes a lot of sense to have a day like Thanksgiving. So if you were to ask the Rama, so then if that's the case, then you should do Thanksgiving. But if you ask the Vilna Gaon, still, it's a non-Jewish practice, something that we've picked up completely from the non-Jews, right? It was established by Abraham Lincoln. Definitely something that we picked up from the non-Jews. And therefore, if that's the case, then who says that it would be permissible to have Thanksgiving? So it's clear that Thanksgiving would fall directly into this machlokes, to this discussion between the Rama, who would seem to allow it, and between the Vilna Gaon, who would seem to say that it's problematic. So how do we assume? So on page 5, we have the cover page of the Igros Moshe, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh L'Bracha. Rav Moshe Feinstein, as we mentioned before, probably the greatest Torah scholar to ever establish himself in the United States. He published his first volume of the Igros Moshe in 1959. It's interesting that Rav Moshe Feinstein went down as probably most famously for his Igros Moshe, for his work of response, which about that were published in his lifetime, I think were 8 volumes, 7 of them he published himself. I think the 8th one was published with his permission, but was towards the end of his life, so he was not as involved in the editing process of it. It's a book of responses. They came out with a 9th volume about 10 years ago that obviously was published posthumously of other letters that he'd written on different topics. And they're all halachic inquiries. People ask him different questions. Rabbanim and lay leaders from all over the United States, really all over the world, sending Rav Moshe different questions. Now, what's fascinating about the reason why Rav Moshe went down in history as the Igros Moshe was because that he didn't intend to go down in history as the Igros Moshe. The Rav Moshe Feinstein, as we mentioned before, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Masifta Tiferes Yerushalayim on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. He was running yeshiva that was like every other yeshiva. His focus was studying Torah Lishma, building up Talmidim, building up a yeshiva. He himself said the Igros Moshe was something that he worked on between Mincha Maariv. It wasn't his main focus. It wasn't the way that he spent most of his time. That's why Rav Schechter says that Rav Moshe has another work that most people don't even know about. Many don't even learn. It's called the Dibros Moshe, which were his lectures, his lecture notes that he gave on his Talmudic discourses. Very, very dense, very, very difficult, highly analytical, long essays. And Rav Schechter said that he thought Rav Moshe had more of an affinity towards his Dibros Moshe than his Igros Moshe. And the way he knew that was because for Rav Schechter's wedding gift, Rav Moshe gifted to Rav Schechter three books, two volumes of his Dibros Moshe and one volume of his Igros Moshe, and put the inscription in the Dibros Moshe because he felt as though he had more of an affinity toward his Dibros Moshe that most people didn't even know about or didn't really study that much. Igros letters, letters of Moshe. Yeah, letters of Rav Moshe Feinstein. So these were his halachic responsa. And he writes in page number six, he deals with the question of Thanksgiving. Someone sent him the question of Thanksgiving. In fact, it's one of the earliest responses of Rav Moshe is his letter about Thanksgiving. And he actually addresses this topic four times in his Igros Moshe. It's possible that the reason why he addressed it so many times is because the first time Rav Moshe addresses it in the Igros Moshe, he does not come to a clear conclusion on the matter. When you read the tshuva, it's not so clear cut what his perspective was. Really, because Rav Moshe, we'll say it outside before we read inside what his bottom line answer was. Because Rav Moshe kind of is saying, well, it's a machlokas between the Rama and the Vilna Gaon. Like it's not something that is so clear cut in the halacha how we're supposed to practice. And if you were to ask the Rama, he'd probably say it's perfectly fine, if not recommended to do. The Vilna Gaon would say that it's prohibited to do. So it is a tough call in halacha, how to just make that call of, are we going to follow the Rama? Are we going to follow the Vilna Gaon? Especially considering the fact that this is also something that has an emotional charge to it. Something that we're inclined to follow the Rama in this particular area, because we all want to be able to show our Akras HaTov to the United States in a formal fashion. So he's a little bit unclear in his very first response on this, and that's probably why he had to write about it three other times, because they kept, you know, kind of hawking him about it and asking, you know, so what is the proper perspective on Thanksgiving? So this is the copy I have here is the one I think he was clearest about in what his position is. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes the following in page number six, the bottom left corner, line number one. He writes, "Bedavar Thanksgiving, with regards to Thanksgiving." See, he writes it in Yiddish. With regards to Thanksgiving, Kfar Kasafti Leechad B'tshuva. I already sent an answer about this in another response, and he writes in the middle of page two, "Shein Lasser Medina Lekvoa Al Yom Ze Eza Simcha." First of all, but don't be too frum about it. Meaning to say that, let's say you wanted to have a bar mitzvah celebration that day. Everybody's off from work. Great day to have a bar mitzvah celebration. Great day to have a wedding on Thanksgiving. So let's make the wedding on So somebody asked Rav Moshe a question and said, am I allowed to establish the bar mitzvah celebration on Thanksgiving? Because maybe it's going to give off this impression of that we're having this big festive celebration just to celebrate this Gentile holiday. And therefore, are we allowed to have a wedding or a bris or a bar mitzvah celebration on this particular day? Everybody's off. This is a good day to have it. But it's a secular holiday. Is that permissible? He says, of course, that's perfectly fine. Nothing to worry about from that perspective. And then he continues and he says, right, Kesudas Bar Mitzvah and Nesuin. But then he writes at the end of line number three, Ella, line four, Shabali Nefesh Yesh Lehem La'achmir. But with regards to celebrating Thanksgiving in general, it's better to be machmir about it and not formalize it as a formal day. Now, this is amazing that Rav Moshe is writing such a thing, because we just read what he wrote before, which is that we have to have immense Akar Satov for the United States. It's incumbent upon every single one of us to go and vote, he said, because we have to show our Akar Satov. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we should allow it to affect the way we view it from a halachic perspective, from a strictly halachic perspective. There is definitely a reason to be machmir to not celebrate Thanksgiving because of the fact that this could be following the practices of the Gentiles in a formal fashion, by celebrating Thanksgiving, which the Vilna Gaon would seem to take issue with, as opposed to the Ramah, who would seem to be okay with it. However, take a look at page number 8. Rabbi Soloveitchik had a different perspective. So Rav Moshe's perspective, you ask Rav Moshe Feinstein whether or not one's allowed to celebrate Thanksgiving, he would probably say kind of the answer of, better not to. That would be Rav Moshe's response. Better not to. Is it 100% prohibited? No. The Ramah writes that it's perfectly fine. Or at least according to the Ramah, it would be perfectly fine. The Ramah lived in Krakow in the 16th century. He didn't know from Thanksgiving, but he would presumably say that it's perfectly fine. However, it better not to, because the Vilna Gaon is still there. However, as we've heard from Rav Schechter many times, and we're going to see Rav Schechter wrote about this as well, that Rabbi Soloveitchik felt it's perfectly permissible to celebrate Thanksgiving in a formalized fashion. And not only did Rabbi Soloveitchik feel this way, but also the Rav's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So we're talking about some of the greatest halachic minds of the previous generation, felt that Thanksgiving is a good thing to practice. In fact, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik and his son, the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, had a turkey on Thanksgiving. They had a full Thanksgiving meal. They didn't feel it was an issue of b'chukosem lo selechu, of walking, of taking on a Gentile practice, because we assume like the Ramah in this particular area, and therefore it would be nothing wrong with it. This is what Rav Schechter writes on the bottom of page 8. This is from the Sefer Nefesh HaRav, which is a collection that Rav Schechter wrote. He wrote it, I think, the year following Rabbi Soloveitchik's passing. A collection of different practices of Rabbi Soloveitchik on all different areas of halacha. It's really an incredible and fascinating work. Rabbi Soloveitchik, he writes in line number 1, would celebrate Thanksgiving. Page 8, line number 1. Das Rabbeinu Haisa. The practice of Rabbi Soloveitchik is shemutar le'echol basar hodu. You're allowed to have turkey. I think next week we'll probably talk about the kashrus of turkey. That'll be our topic for next week. It's going to be Erev Thanksgiving, so a good time to talk about the kashrus of turkey. It's perfectly permissible to eat turkey on Besof November, towards the end of November, Biyom Thanksgiving. On the day of Thanksgiving, if you notice, by the way, that Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Schechter wrote in Yiddish Thanksgiving a little differently, because Rav Moshe spoke Yiddish with a Russian accent. Versus with a Litvish accent, and therefore the way it's written is a little bit differently. But nothing wrong with eating turkey on Thanksgiving. And he continues and he says, there's nothing wrong with the kashrus of turkey. Again, we'll talk about that next week. And then he writes in the next line, by the underline, line number 4, there's nothing wrong with this from a perspective of taking on a Gentile practice. It's not an issue of taking on a Gentile practice, because it makes a lot of sense to show in a formalized fashion our hakar satov for the United States. V'chein shamanu shahaita gam das aviv hagon Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. This is also the practice of the Rav's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, who was the son of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, a Rosh Yeshiva of Lashon and Rav of Brisk. So it's interesting to note, Rav Schechter would say this a number of times. He said this a number of times, that the Rav's practice on Thanksgiving was always the same. In order to appreciate this, we have to understand the Rav's weekly schedule. The Rav did not live in New York, even though he was the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University, which was in Manhattan. The Rav did not live in New York. He lived in Boston. He was the chief rabbi of Boston. He was the Rav in Boston. And so every Monday afternoon, the Rav would travel to New York. And Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, he would teach his class in New York, and then Thursday afternoon he'd travel back to Boston. This was his practice every single week that he did for like 50 years. Incredible. That was Rabbi Soloveitchik's, that's what Soloveitchik's weekly schedule looked like. On Thanksgiving every single year, the Rav would give a longer than normal class on Thanksgiving. Instead of speaking for his normal 2-hour Talmud class, he'd speak much longer than that because he figured everybody was off from college courses anyway. Shouldn't let Thanksgiving get in the way of more Torah. So he would teach more on Thanksgiving. He'd take a later train back to Boston in order so that he could make it home in time for his Thanksgiving dinner with his family. But that was his practice. Every single year, he'd teach more on Thanksgiving, more Torah on Thanksgiving than he would do on a regular day, because everybody was off from college anyway. So there was a perfect opportunity to learn more. And then he'd go back to make it home in time for Thanksgiving. Rav Schechter, he says that he thinks that this is a good practice to have a formal Thanksgiving meal. We have one at home as well. We have a Thanksgiving meal following the minhagim of Rabbi Rav Schechter and Rabbi Soloveitchik, my Rebbeim. I think I've heard from Rav Schechter, but it also makes a lot of sense that what we do is that we have our Thanksgiving meal, but we have chicken. We don't have turkey. And nothing to do with the kashrus of turkey. I love turkey. We have turkey. The reason is because intellectually honest perspective, why am I having turkey particularly on the fourth Thursday in November? Why, right? Do I always have turkey every Thursday night for dinner? If that's the case, then there's nothing wrong with having turkey on Thanksgiving. But it's a little bit more difficult to rationalize specifically having turkey for dinner on the fourth Thursday of November, if not for the fact that this is strictly to act like the non-Jews. Having a formalized Thanksgiving meal, that's to show Hakaras HaTov to the United States for everything that we spoke about before. But the menu has nothing to do with me showing Hakaras HaTov. Nothing connected of me eating turkey and showing proper Hakaras HaTov to the United States. But as we mentioned before, if one wants to have turkey on Thanksgiving, it's perfectly permissible to have turkey on Thanksgiving. It's more of a chumrah that we have to not. As we said before, Rabbi Soloveitchik himself used to eat turkey on Thanksgiving. His father of Moshe Soloveitchik, son of Reb Chaim, used to have turkey on Thanksgiving. So certainly what to rely on if one would prefer to have turkey on Thanksgiving, that is perfectly perfectly permissible. As we mentioned before, we'll pick up next time, continuing with the topic of Thanksgiving, because there's two other topics related to Thanksgiving we need to get to. One is, we mentioned before, what's the whole purpose of the day? Why is it that as we're coming out now saying it's permissible to do Thanksgiving? Let's just review. According to Rav Moshe, it's better not to, because of the Vilna Gaon's opinion. Rabbi Soloveitchik, for sure, with all the fixings of turkey and cranberry sauce, perfectly permissible. Rav Schechter says, also, it's a wonderful thing to do to celebrate Thanksgiving, but probably just better to do with chicken or some other meal. It doesn't really matter what the food is, but turkey is probably not the best food to have for Thanksgiving, just because that's probably b'chukos sam lo seilechu. But as we mentioned before, Rav Soloveitchik endorsed having turkey on Thanksgiving as well. We should mention, just because we always try and give the full picture, Rav Hutner Zatzal was fire and brimstone, totally against Thanksgiving. Rav Hutner was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. He was very against having Thanksgiving. I can't imagine that he changed the schedule at all for Thanksgiving. I don't think any of his students went home to have their Thanksgiving meals. He was very against Thanksgiving. But so we have these different opinions. We have Rav Hutner on one end, that it's completely prohibited. You have Rabbi Soloveitchik on the other, saying that it's perfectly permissible with all the fixings in turkey. And then you have Rav Schechter endorsing the practice, saying that it's a good practice to have. That's our practice, but just modify it a little bit. So that way you're staying focused on its whole purpose, to give proper Hakaras HaTov. And then you have Rav Moshe somewhere in the middle, kind of saying, like, better not to. Nevertheless, that's our practices that we do celebrate Thanksgiving. But as we mentioned before, from the Rav and from Rabbi Schechter, if one's going to celebrate Thanksgiving, we have to do it with the right intention of making sure we're doing it to have proper Hakaras HaTov. So what we'll pick up with next time is we'll talk about Judaism's perspective on the importance of Hakaras HaTov, why it's so significant, and why it's important to take time to have proper Hakaras HaTov for the United States, and to have Hakaras HaTov in general. And we'll also speak about the kashrus of turkey, in order that we know whether or not the turkey that we're going to be eating on, if one is going to have that practice of having turkey on Thanksgiving, whether or not the turkey that day is kosher, whether or not the turkey leftovers that you have for lunch the next day with your turkey sandwiches are kosher. What's the story with turkey? Is also a very interesting topic, but we'll speak about that Erev Thanksgiving, God willing, on Wednesday. All right, so if we're going to practice Thanksgiving, we should do so with the mindset of having proper Hakaras HaTov for the United States. As Rav Moshe said before, his language is so amazing. He says, a fundamental principle of Judaism is Hakaras HaTov. Therefore, it's incumbent upon us to have Hakaras HaTov for the United States. It's obviously our duty to show that that gratitude to the United States, like we do on Thanksgiving. All right, we'll stop here for now. Yeah, Jack.